no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to a special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Illegal Curve presents 2021 expansion draft coverage with Dave Manuke, with Ezra Ginsberg. I am your host, Drew Mindell. We welcome you to this special program. I got to tell you guys, a special program that would have been a lot more entertaining, a lot more suspenseful, and a lot more, frankly, interesting had the NHL not royally screwed this up with all the picks having been released about 8 hours ago.
Drew, I think you used the word frankly on purpose because Frank Saravalli was on fire. Our good friend, you know, he's been on the show many times before. We've got to know him really well over the years. I mean, he was just dropping each team's pick. I think there was just one team that he didn't get. And then I think that was the Rangers, right? And then if I'm not mistaken, Colin Blackwell was the player. So yeah, I mean, we all found out around, you know, 10:30, 10:45 Central Time in the morning, you know, who the Kraken were going to be taken. And then, you know, obviously when it came out that, and we have to give, you know, shout out to TSN's Darren Dreger as well. He had, you know, Mason Appleton and, you know, not a huge shocker, guys. Like, we knew it was going to be Dylan DeMello or Mason Appleton, right? Like, there was an outside shot. It was going to be Jansen Harkins, but absolutely, Drew, like, there isn't going to be a lot of suspense. We all know who's going to be taken by the Kraken. Really, boys, the big, you know, thing that we're waiting to hear is all of these side deals. Because I know, you know, you have a few players, like the one, you know, that kind of, you know, stands out to me is like Alexander True on the San Jose Sharks, right? Like, there are a few players that, you know, you kind of were scratching your head. Gavin Bayreuther on the Columbus Blue Jackets over Max Domi, right? Like, there's going to be some side deals, and, you know, we're going to find out about those later tonight.
Absolutely going to be the case. It is, you know, if you're ESPN and this is your first big broadcast in your new NHL deal, I don't know how you're not quite upset about this. I mean, I do find it to be very bush league. It would be like if the draft happened and they did and all the picks were leaked before the draft occurred. It just is very bush league as far as I'm concerned. It's going to be interesting, to your point, Ezzy, about what's going to happen with any of the side deals, if there's going to be any sort of, you know, the Kraken have a ton of cap space after their selections, because frankly, their roster isn't any good. You look at their roster and they bypassed a lot of what I would describe as quality yet expensive hockey players, I think, in order to, you know, accumulate cap space. And that, I think, is going to be the most fascinating subplot of this evening and of the next, you know, 24, 48, 72 hours. What do the Kraken do with all of that cap space? What do they do with some of the players that they have selected that they might not have any role for, Dave? Because frankly, that's the only part that's still exciting at this point.
Yeah. And it's a fair point, Drew. I mean, some people would say that perhaps part of the appeal was that a lot of people were talking about the draft throughout the course of the day, you know, driving interest in it throughout the crowd. We just lost Drew. Okay, Drew's gone, but just Ezzy and I running the show. So that to me, Ez, was one of the things I thought was interesting, is did you create more buzz about the night with all the insiders breaking every trade? Look, it pisses some people off. Some people don't like it. Others didn't have a problem with it. Others like to find out that information. So, I mean, I didn't think it was a huge deal. I mean, if you didn't want to find out, there's an easy answer. Stay off Twitter and just wait till tonight. If it's that important to you to not know who is on the, who is going to be the pick and who isn't, then just don't be on Twitter. Just stay off Twitter until the broadcast tonight. And then the people who are interested can find out. So, you know, I didn't think it was a huge deal. I didn't think it really ruins it for ESPN. I think there was a ton of buzz. People were talking about it all day. And I guess we'll see the numbers ultimately tonight, Drew, in terms of how many people actually watched the broadcast. I mean, you could say that, you know, the guy like Frank Saravalli saved everyone the heartache of watching sometimes these enterprises. Or I remember the Vegas one was a little bit, interesting the way it kind of went down. So again, they're not necessarily the most exciting things to watch. I mean, the reveal would have been exciting. Teams, fan bases would have been excited about it. But, you know, perhaps this way you just kind of are waiting. Although from what I was reading earlier today, it doesn't actually sound like there were a ton of side deals. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. And, you know, Drew, take yourself off of mute, first of all. But yeah, like, I mean, you know, when you talk about some of these, you know, selections, I don't know about that, Dave. Like, I don't know how many, you know, side deals we're talking about, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's, you know, a handful, right? Like, I don't know if that's three or four or five, but, you know, to your point, you know, and we're going to get into, you know, the Kraken's roster and Mason Appleton over Dylan DeMello and everything like that. But like, when you're talking about Frank Saravalli, who's with dailyfaceoff.com now, and you're talking about Darren Dreger, TSN, Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, like, this is their job. So they're not going to sit on news. So for all of those people that didn't like the fact that these guys were breaking all of the selections on Twitter or social media, get over it. Like, this is what these guys are paid the big bucks to do.
That's right. Look, the reporters are going to report. So I don't have a problem with it from that
perspective. They don't work for the NHL.
They don't work for the NHL. But you know, I'm trying to think back 4 years ago to the Golden Knights. And there were not this many leaks, not by a long shot. You remember we were watching, you know, the expansion draft of the Golden Knights. And, you know, the question for the Jets was, you know, who were they going to lose? Did they make a side deal? Anything along those lines? We know now that they did make a side deal. But remember when Chris Thorburn's name got announced, you know, there was electricity, you know, that sort of went through the fan base. Like Nobody had a clue. Nobody had a clue at all. But I mean, so that's that part of the excitement is sort of gone tonight. And I'm hoping that something will fill it in its stead. But, you know, right now, the way things look, it's sort of a bit of an anticlimactic evening. But that being said, let's get right into it.
Drew, don't tell people that because they're supposed to stay with us for the remainder.
What I was going to say, Dave. I'm going to say, let's get right into it and talk about the decision of the Seattle Kraken to select Mason Appleton, and then subsequently the decision of the Jets. They now do not lose Dylan DeMello, which certainly was a big risk. I think a lot of people are surprised that the Jets were able to hold on to DeMello after leaving him exposed earlier this week. And I tweeted it out that, you know, just because the Jets dodged a bullet and didn't lose DeMello didn't make that the right decision. And I firmly believe that. And I had some people agreeing with me. I had more people disagreeing with me, and that's okay. That's everybody for the most part was respectful. So I don't have a problem with that. I think that the Jets, you know, got lucky here that the Kraken chose Appleton over DeMello, because I think right now Dylan DeMello is I don't know that he's a more valuable player. He's a more valuable player to the Winnipeg Jets than Mason Appleton is right now, I would say.
Yeah, and just think about the defenseman, Drew, that the Kraken have taken or are expected to take, right? And, you know, I think this Kraken team, based on who we expect them to take, I think they could be a playoff team because they're in a weak division, right? Like, you look at their team, and obviously you don't have any superstar players. And, you know, your first line is probably going to be, you know, Yanni Gourde, Jordan Eberle, and Jared McCann, all good players. But, you know, your top pair could be Mark Giordano, Adam Larson. You know, they've announced that, you know, Jamie Oleksiak has signed, you know, I believe it's a four-year deal or a five-year deal. You know, he's going to be in your top four. And they're not done. And all of the players that they select, as you mentioned earlier, Drew, they don't necessarily, you know, they're not going to necessarily be, I should say, on the opening night roster, right? So I think they're going to have a very competitive team. And, you know, I think, you know, the big names that were out there obviously yesterday, and, you know, that's those are the names that we expected that they might take. Carey Price, obviously, in Montreal, and Vladimir Tarasenko in St. Louis. But you're absolutely right. They didn't, you know, choose some of the bigger contracts. Like, look at Nashville. Cali Yarncroke is a really valuable player. Like, he's more likely going to be a third line guy. But, you know, they obviously had no interest in Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene. I shouldn't say no interest, but they obviously went with Yarncroke. But those contracts, like, how good are those contracts going to look in 3 or 4 years, right? So I think, you know, there's some surprises. But when you talk about Mason Appleton, obviously, you know, the Jets lost the player that they you know, could replace more easily, right? Like, you're able to replace him with a Jansen Harkins or Christian Vesalainen. And Dylan DeMello is obviously not as easily replaceable from within. You'd have to acquire a defenseman via trade or via free agency. So, yeah, I mean, the Jets keep Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello. I think Chevy's pretty happy with that.
I would agree with you too that he is pretty happy with that, and that, you know, if he had said when, you know, at the start of this expansion draft process that they would not lose one of their top six defensemen, then he would probably have taken that as a bet or taken that as an offer when presented to him. And that's how it works out. Mason Appleton is a nice story. He had a very good year, and it looks like the sky's the limit in terms of his talent. I mean, does he probably cap out at best at in a top six role? Yeah, maybe he could develop into a second line guy, probably more suited to be a third line guy, but he'll have a great opportunity there in Seattle, to be up front with a forward group that, certainly there's no superstars among that forward group. Let me ask you guys this. If you had been Ron Francis, if you had been the brain trust of the Seattle Kraken, would you have selected Carey Price? Would you have taken Carey Price when the Montreal Canadiens chose to expose him?
No. And the reason is simply contract. Right. And that's why I thought there was a chance, but I didn't think there was a good chance or a high probability of the Kraken taking Carey Price, because you're talking about $10.5 million for another 5 years, right, boys? Like, we all know that, Price is coming off of a great run with the Canadiens to the Stanley Cup final, but with his injury history and, it's uncertain if he's going to be healthy to start the season. I just think the risk outweighs the reward here. So I think that's why ultimately Ron Francis didn't take Carey Price. The fact that he went with Fleury, the defenseman, Fleury's a good prospect. Like, Dave would know, that he's a pretty good prospect, but I'd be surprised if there wasn't some type of deal there, right? Like, because I was thinking, you look at Paul Byron was available, Jonathan Drouin was available, and obviously, these guys aren't necessarily first line guys on a good team, but there were some good players to choose from. So it was a little bit surprising that they went with Fleury, but Fleury or Primo? There were two Fleury brothers taken. Or at least they will be eventually taken. It was Fleury, defenseman off of Montreal. Primo's the goaltender. Caden Primo's the goaltender. Yeah. I'm getting them confused. But, I wasn't surprised. And I also wasn't surprised with Tarasenko either, because, again, you're talking about a high cap hit. I think in real dollars, if I'm not mistaken, it's around $9 million that he's owed this year. And then I think it's $7 million in real dollars next year. So that's a lot of money, right? So the Kraken aren't done, guys, right? Like, I mean, is it out of the realm of possibility that the Kraken go after a Jack Eichel or a Seth Jones or a Dougie Hamilton? Like, I think all of those players are options here. Mark Giordano was the only, big ticket player they selected.
It seems, Dave, that the Kraken philosophy and that their game plan entering this season and entering this free agency period and after the expansion draft was to do everything in their power to not saddle themselves with any bad contracts, to make sure that they had, a significant amount of cap space. Because, after they select the 30 names that we've all heard all throughout the day, they're barely over the salary floor that they needed to reach. They're going to have something like, is it $30 million, $30 plus million in cap space, something along those lines. So it seems like Seattle is positioning themselves to be a player in the trade market, in the free agency market. Free agency opens next Wednesday. A week from now, we'll have a special Wednesday free agency show next Wednesday night. The trades are there's possible deals that are going to be announced tonight. And then the trade market opens up for all the other teams, I think, at 12 noon tomorrow. So the expectation is that the next 24, 48 hours right up into the draft on first round of the draft on Friday night are going to be very busy. But it does seem like Seattle is sort of, they didn't want to do anything that would potentially saddle themselves with a bad contract.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the thing they've quickly become known for, is that they seem to have a fairly respected head office in terms of their analysis and that sort of thing. So it would seem to me, Drew, that, when you ask about a guy like Carey Price, especially with the uncertainty, and perhaps that was a little subterfuge from Montreal, we're going to let Carey Price be available. But then all of a sudden it's like, but he may be out for the entire season.
But he might need knee surgery tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there's a concern there, of course, if you're Seattle, that you don't want to have a guy who's not going to be playing. And obviously they would have done their due diligence, but I think you're right. I think that they probably expect to be able to pick players up and attract new free agents. You're going to have a world-class facility, a new team. There may be no state tax. Yeah, no. I mean, there's a lot of cachet surrounding that team, and there's probably a lot of excitement to be able to be part of something new. So I think that there's going to be a lot of interest in folks becoming a part of that roster. And look, maybe people hope, especially in a weaker division, that maybe with some solid players and good coaching and maybe some additional augmentation, like you said, this could be a good enough team to make some noise a la Vegas. When, remember, what was the big knock on Vegas? What were their odds to be a playoff team, let alone a Stanley Cup finalist? What was it, like 300-1 or something like that? It was Drew, you're more into the odds than I am, but I know it was not a long good. Shot. And so the reality is most people don't take these teams very seriously. And sometimes that's at your own peril, right? Because, back in the day when the expansion drafts happened, teams used to be able to protect, I think it was when Columbus and Minnesota came in, you're allowed to protect 14 players and two goaltenders. So realistically, they were going down to like your best guy in the AHL, not even your NHL players at sometimes in those instances. And look what happened to those teams. And I think in this instance, you're seeing a potential for teams. And when you're paying, $650 million, there's probably a reason you get to be a pretty good team right off the bat. So we'll see. I'm not surprised because Ron Francis, he gets a lot of respect for what he was able to do in Carolina and what he was able to achieve and kind of set that footprint for that franchise and how he was able to do it. And I think that it seems to be at least that they're bringing that same sort of imprint to Seattle.
I'm going to be really interested. Just wanted to say, Drew,
go ahead.
I agree 100%. Ron Francis is a very smart hockey mind, and Dave is absolutely right. Like, obviously, Hayden Fleury, he would be very familiar with, right? Yeah. And we talked about, Cale Fleury was taken from Montreal, which, surprised a lot of people considering there were some good veteran forwards available. But yeah, I think Tampa Bay is a team that I'm very curious to see if they sign another player, right? Trade for another player. Like the two guy obvious ones are Tyler Johnson and Alex Killorn. And obviously, Killorn is a better player than Johnson at this point in his career. But I mean, Johnson, if he's, on your third or fourth line and you have the cap space, Yanni Gourde made so much sense. Like Yanni Gourde on most teams is not a third, right? Like him and Blake Coleman are second liners on most teams, right? And they were a big part of the last two cup championships. So I think this team is going to do pretty well. And it's way too early, guys. Like it's mid-July here. Like, we can't start, predicting the Kraken making the playoffs, let alone going on a deep run. But look, they're going to be solid in net. Like the one, curious move to me, like Joey Dacord, like Dave, you would know, former Belleville Senator in the American Hockey League, like late draft pick. He's a pretty good goalie, but I thought for sure that after the Kraken didn't take Carey Price, like I thought Kaapo Kähkönen on Minnesota, really good goalie coming off his best season, I thought he was going to go. Carson Soucy's like a decent defenseman, like he's got some good attributes to his game, but like he's not more than a third pairing defenseman on most teams, right? Like, so I'd be surprised if there wasn't, something given to Billy Guerin there. But yeah, there's a few teams that I think, we're watching, expecting more moves. Look at the Islanders, guys. Like the Islanders, I think, have cleared up what, $12 or $13 million of cap space in the last week. You got to think that they're going after Ryan Suter or somebody big because they've freed up a lot of cap space.
Look, there's a lot of machinations that are occurring behind the scenes and have occurred behind the scenes. But I mean, some of these guys that the Kraken have selected, I mean, I'm watching, I have a third screen set up tonight, so I'm watching the broadcast right now. The Kraken just selected a guy from Columbus, and we knew that they were going to select him that I've never heard of. Gavin Reisbauer.
As he bought his jersey.
Hey, Ruther, yeah.
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 XL. If they're taking him, I have to believe they're taking him because there is some sort of deal that just hasn't been announced yet. Similar to when they took Chris Thorburn, the Golden Knights did, as part of a deal with the Jets. I mean, some of the decisions and some of the names that have been leaked are not what I would describe as NHL caliber players, and I understand
Alexander True. That was the one I mentioned, off the top of the show.
Nathan Bastian out of New Jersey. I mean, well, as I'm you a Devils call fan, the Devils.
So, yeah, I mean, he was a good OHL player. He just, I think he played about 45 games, if I'm not mistaken, for the Devils this year. So he's a good prospect. But yeah, I mean, PK Subban was the one that everybody was curious about, right? And obviously, he makes $8 or $9 million a year. So nobody really thought that the Kraken would take him. But yeah, Nathan Bastian is, he's not going to score 30 goals and 65 points next year. That's for sure. But he's definitely a good young prospect. But yeah, your point is well taken, Drew. I mean, up front, you know, after the top two lines, like I still like, you know, the selections they've made, and obviously they're not done. Like we talked about, you know, Tyler Johnson, Alex Killorn, those might be targets for Ronnie Francis. But, you know, you look at, you know, some of the players like Eunice Donskoy from Colorado. Some people thought JT Compher, former Dave Knows University of Michigan, played on the line with Kyle Connor. Who's the other guy?
Mott.
On Tyler Vancouver. Mott. Tyler Mott. There you go. That was the Triple M line?
CCM line.
CCM line. There you go. So a lot of people thought it was going to be JT Compher. Eunice Donskoy, though, guys, like you follow his career, like he's been a really good kind of like, you know, third line kind of guy that can play in all situations. So Cali Yornkrok, like these types of guys. I mean, like Jordan Eberle, you're talking about a guy who's on the top line with Matty Barzal in Long Island. So
Jordan Eberle just walked up to the podium.
And he was one of the guys that had one of the higher tickets, right, Dave? Like the highest paid guys they have on the team are, you know, in that kind of $5 to $6 million range. So yeah, Drew, this is not nobody's picking them to be a Stanley Cup contender, but you know, from the net out, you know, Vitek Vanacek is coming off of a really impressive rookie year with the Capitals. And obviously, you know, Chris Driedger, he's going to be your 1A goaltender there. So, I mean, this team is not going to be a bottom feeder. They're going to be competitive. And as Dave mentioned, you know, 20 years ago, those expansion teams like Minnesota, Columbus, you know, Atlanta, they just didn't get to pick the same type of quality players here. And as you mentioned, Drew, with all the cap space they have, you know, they're not done. They're going to be signing more players in free agency.
And that's the part that I'm really looking forward to seeing is everything else that is, you know, sort of that we don't yet know. That's the excitement for me over the next, you know, however long this. I mean, we know that the broadcast itself, the expansion draft broadcast, is I believe only 90 minutes. So I think that's supposed to wrap up at 8:30, you know, 8:30 Central time, and then, you know, hopefully at that point in time we'll be able to see some of these trades that may or may not exist, and we really don't know. If there's any takeaway, and I put an asterisk next to this right now because I could change my opinion depending on some of the side deals. It seems like general managers learned from 4 years ago. They learned that yes, we're going to lose a player. Yes, it might be a player that we didn't really want to lose, but let's not exacerbate the problem by losing a player and then, you know, adding, you know, and then, you know, giving the Kraken in this instance incentive to take more assets away from our team. You know, it sounds like they learned their lesson that, you know, you're not going to trade an arm and a leg to keep a guy away from you know, a specific part of your arm like they did 4 years ago with Vegas. I mean, that is, you know, that seems to be what I'm sort of taking away from this expansion draft so far. That the general managers really weren't willing to do as much business maybe with Ron Francis as they were willing to do with George McPhee in Vegas 4 years ago.
Yeah, 100% correct. And we know that the asking price was really high, right, from Ron Francis for some of these players. And, you know, when you look at I look at, you know, what Kyle Dubas did, guys, and you can say whatever you want about Toronto and their failings, you know, losing in the first round to Montreal. But like they basically traded Philip Hallander and a seventh round pick so that, you know, Seattle didn't take Alex Kerfoot. Right. Like that's essentially what happened.
Yeah.
And you can say whatever you want. Kerfoot's a really good player. Like I've always liked Kerfoot. You know, he was one of the best Leaf players in that first round. Yeah. I think if I'm not mistaken, 6 points in seven games in that first round series. So Kerfoot's like, you know, he's not a 75 point player, but he's a solid kind of 40 to 45 point guy on the third line. Like those types of players that don't make a ton of money. I don't have his cap hit in front of me. Maybe you guys do, but I want to say he's like between 3 and 4 million. So, I mean, that's what a third line player should be making. Right. So I think, you know, Toronto did well here. I mean, Jared McCann is the player that selected. He never, you know, set foot in Toronto, right? Yeah, in terms of playing for the Leafs. So I think, you know, what you're seeing is much more reasonable. I mean, I don't think you're going to see, you know, Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, Riley Smith. Like, I just don't think you're going to see that, you know, replicated here with Seattle.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think there's no, like as just said, and to your point, Drew, general managers learn their lessons. And they learned, you know, what they were going to be able to get away with, what they weren't. Mike McIntyre, who's going to join us in about 20 minutes, he tweeted out that had Kevin Cheveldayoff left, Logan Stanley available, he would have been selected. So, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, again.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Let's get it back to the Winnipeg Jets perspective. Let's say good evening to everybody joining us, wherever you may be watching us on our YouTube channel, on any of our social media platforms. Nice to see so many of you so active in the chat room as well. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a special edition expansion draft coverage on this Wednesday night. So I saw Mike's tweet, and I certainly understand where that's coming from and the source where that's coming from. Do you believe that had the Jets exposed Logan Stanley instead of Dylan DeMello, we'd be talking today right now about Logan Stanley not being a member of the Jets?
Yeah, we have no idea, right? Like, yeah, I think there's some people, you know, there's a lot of armchair GMs out there, right? Like, Jets fans are passionate. We know that, guys. But, you know, this is all I'm going to say about this. It doesn't matter at this point, right? Like, what I mean is, like, you know, the Kraken have taken Mason Appleton. They chose Appleton. So obviously Chevy made the right decision, right? But Drew, I have absolutely, like, I would be lying if I said I knew that, you know, Ron Francis and the Kraken were going to take Logan Stanley if the Jets exposed him. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Chevy and Ron Francis have a lot of conversations over the last, you know, few weeks, month, whatever. But hey, you know, Drew, I'm on the record. Like, if I was a GM, and obviously I will never be a GM of an NHL team. I mean, I'm turning 39 this Saturday. I still have hopes that I could be a GM of a professional sports team like George Costanza. But I'll settle for traveling assistant to the secretary, right, boys? So, I mean, the Kraken take Appleton, and he's a guy that was a really good third line player, and he was a great player, you know, considering where he was drafted by the Jets back in 2015. But they managed to keep Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello. But there was a huge risk. It was risky, and obviously, you know, the Kraken went with the player that the Jets were hoping they took.
Well, you know, here's why I'm skeptical about that point of view. The Seattle Kraken organization, their front office, is very analytically inclined. And with all due respect to Logan Stanley and all due respect to his potential, and he certainly has a great deal of potential. And, from a Jets perspective, I think it's great that they didn't lose Logan Stanley. I mean, if he can continue to develop and, people are, calling him the next Chara, and that's, certainly getting ahead of themselves, but whatever, if he develops into the next Chara, terrific. But I have trouble believing that that an analytically inclined organization like the Kraken would have taken Logan Stanley. I mean, Logan Stanley's success last year was largely due to the Jets sheltering his minutes and protecting him and protecting the matchups that they put him out in.
But hold on a second, Drew. But that's to be expected with a rookie defenseman, right? Like, they're not going to start Logan. They're not going to start Stanley, on the first pair or even the second pair. But you're right. I mean, he was sheltered. He was playing with, whether it was Tucker Pullman or whether it was with Dylan DeMello. But all I wanted to say was, I think, that's to be expected. I mean, you're going to see that with most young defensemen.
Drew, I think the other point that needs to be made, like, I like Dylan DeMello.
Yeah.
But Dylan DeMello isn't, Alex Pietrangelo. Like, I mean, he's a good, solid, second pairing defenseman. Like, he's not a first pairing defenseman. Maybe on the Jets team he is. And the reality is why I think people are creating a situation here is because, Dylan DeMello, the Jets could ill afford to lose the right side defenseman on the right side. They have a lot more depth on the left than they do on the right. And for folks, I focus on the Moose all the time. So we know Leon Gavanke and Johnny Kozevic, two reasonable draft picks, especially Johnny Kozevic, who I thought had a phenomenal year. For the Moose, they're better suited to starting next season in the AHL. I don't think it's a good idea to give them that sort of pressure. You don't have Tucker Pullman. He's a UFA. Your right side could – so I guess the reason why I think Dylan DeMello becomes a bigger thing than he is because Dylan DeMello is important to the Jets. Is Dylan DeMello, the best defenseman? Like, I see some of the numbers that are thrown around with Dylan DeMello. And again, like I said, I think he's a good defenseman. What do you get? He's smart. He's efficient. He's not offensively minded, but he does what you want him to do, right? He makes a good first pass. So – again, Dylan DeMello is a good, in my mind, you know, second pairing defenseman on the right side. And so the Jets don't have a lot of depth. Whereas, you know, in theory, Logan Stanley is on the left, and people say the Jets have a lot of the same thing. But you got to remember, Dylan Sandberg is a big boy, 6'2", 6'3". He's going to be a big boy. Johnny Kovacevic is 6'5". So the Jets aren't exact. Tucker Pullman's not big, but he's like, well, it's probably 6'2". So these guys aren't exactly small fry. I know what people are talking about in terms of big size, and Logan Stanley has that. And Logan Stanley's the potential. Now, again, all the same people who are clamoring for Logan Stanley, and I'm not going to say this about everyone, but there's a lot of people who were calling Logan Stanley bust, you know, up until last year. So there's not a lot of people who had the long view on Logan Stanley, unlike right. some people in the top right corner of this chat currently. But the point is that, again, Logan Stanley may develop, may get to that next level of, you know, and I'm with Essie. What do you expect? Are you putting Logan Stanley against Connor McDavid in his first year? Not a chance. Not his first year in the NHL, I'm saying. You're not doing that. So you're going to put him in a role to have success. He had success with Dylan DeMello. I'm just saying it's not as cut and dry. And for the record, and I just want to note, I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit. Who was saying that Mason Appleton was a likely target rather than – I said, isn't it interesting that there could be a little misdirection here? Everybody's talking about DeMello and Stanley, but I think Mason Appleton's the target based on what the need is. Oh. Let me just finish. And all the other defensemen, the quality defensemen, the defensemen, the Jets, and remember, Jamie Oleksiak, the guy everybody wanted. Larson, the guy everybody wanted. So there's a lot of quality defensemen that are available for Seattle to have taken that they didn't need to rely on Dylan DeMello, whereas you could have a guy like Mason Appleton who, again, fourth line a winger in the Manitoba Moose organization in his first year, AHL Rookie of the Year, earns a spot in the third line, could move up higher. So I'm just saying that Mason Appleton is a player. He's the guy that just needed to lose, but he's not like who cares? It's not a big deal that you lost him.
Well, let's talk about Mason Appleton, because obviously he played a significant role for the Winnipeg Jets last year. He was a guy that, you know, was generally in a third line role. Sometimes he played higher up in the lineup. He played sometimes, got some power play minutes. Who fills that role for the Winnipeg Jets in the next season? Is that a role that is going to be filled by Jansen Harkins, a guy who is a little bit of sort of got lost in the shuffle? Does he still have a future with this organization, or is the fact that he couldn't crack the lineup last year, you know, an indicator that Paul Maurice no longer has faith or no longer trusts Jansen Harkins? You know, is it a guy like Christian Vesalainen? We've talked about Vesalainen as maybe being a top six option, if, you know, depending on what the Jets do or don't do in free agency, because that's a role he's more suited to. So from your guys' perspective, obviously, Appleton's not going to be on the team next year. Who do you see trying to really get that first opportunity to fill his role?
Well, you just said all the players, right? Like, there isn't one, there isn't one player that right now you would say has a head start or, you know, the upper hand, right? Like, that's my own opinion. Like, first off, you know, Christian Vesalainen is a much different player than Mason Appleton. Right. And, you know, so Jansen Harkins is, you know, more similar to Appleton, but he's a natural center, right? Who's obviously played wing. So, I mean, Harkins would make a lot more sense, I think, on the third line. But, you know, what is missing here, guys, is are the Jets going to acquire another forward via trade or via free agency that they think can play that role, right? But those are the options, right, Drew? And, you know, David Gustafson is a guy that Dave M has talked about for months now. I mean, he's a guy that you would probably pencil in as a fourth line center. I wouldn't expect him to be an option on the third line wing. But, I mean, there's a lot of moving targets here, guys. Like, you know, when you think about Andrew Kopp, he's still unsigned. You know, like if Andrew Kopp is signed to a long-term deal, is he going to be that guy that's kind of given that chance? You know, for, I'm not talking about like, you know, 5 games, 10 games. I'm talking about, you know, a second line role the whole season, right? On the wing, because we know that, you know, even though Kopp can play center, he's most likely going to be used as a wing by Paul Maurice. But yeah, Drew, it's Jansen Harkins. It's Christian Vesalainen. But right now, I mean, it depends, you know, what happens in training camp, who else the Jets bring in, right? Like, does Cole Perfetti, you know, factor into the top six for the Jets? Because I don't think you're going to see Cole Perfetti, you know, in a third or fourth line checking role, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of balls up in the air. So, you know, you nailed it. It's most likely going to be one of Harkins or Vesalainen, but I just think it's way too easy. And with the NHL draft coming up and with free agency coming up, guys, like, Chevy's got a lot of more moves to make, right? Like, we don't expect, you know, all of the, you know, pending UFAs to come back. But, you know, is a guy like Matty Perreault going to come back? Maybe, but you'd probably put him on the fourth line, right? Is Paul Stastny going to come back? Yeah, but he's probably not going to be your third line winger. So, I mean, Stastny could always be an option for the Jets, but most likely not in a Mason Appleton type of role. But back to what Dave said, Appleton is a big loss. He's a great player. He's not a guy that's going to score 35 goals and 70 points. But, you know, he works his ass off every game. And, you know, he's coming off of his career year in the NHL. So, you know, good for him. He's going to get to play, you know, in a beautiful brand new arena in the, you know, for the NHL's newest franchise. And, you know, he did a great job for the Jets and Moose organization. And I think a lot of Jets fans are going to miss him.
Dave?
Yeah, you know what? It's a good question, Drew, in terms of replacing Appleton. I mean, I think he was a bit, like I said, like I sang some of his virtues earlier. And I think that's one of his hard work, his work ethic, his speed, his size, like a lot of his goals, if you think about it, and I was looking back and watching some of the video today, a lot of his goals were guy like going hard at the net and kind of being willing to go into that dirty area, few tips, but for the most part, it'd be him driving the net. And we saw, you know, some of the ones, and some of them were highlight, but for the most part, you know, he had that a different element. Now, I'm of the mind that David Gustafson probably could fit into that role. I think David Gustafson, you know, as I said, I'm a big fan of what he's been able to do at the AHL level so far for the Manitoba Moose. I think we saw, you know, more of an offensive role than we're used to seeing from David Gustafson this year, both when he was with Tingsryd in the Swedish second league, and also when he got to the Moose and he was playing on the top line. So to me, David Gustafson is a guy who does everything. He does power play. He does penalty kill. He plays 5-on-5. He plays in the last minute of the game. He's that guy who can do everything. Now, most people would say, and we would be of the mind, I think, that, you know, it's Scheifele, Dubois, Lowry, well, maybe Gustafson. That was what we were thinking. But we know, we shouldn't say we know, like not 100%, but we're fairly confident in feeling that Paul Maurice will likely want a veteran center to be manning that fourth line. Okay, that's fine. But David Gustafson's a guy who, while maybe not as offensive and as fast as Mason Appleton, I would say he's a better defensive player than Mason Appleton, and he will fit, in my mind, and again, he's a left shot versus a right shot, but he would fit fairly well with, in terms of his intelligence, with Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry. So if you want a hard shutdown third line, David Gustafson, I think, will fit seamlessly with that third line. Jansen Harkins, smart player, you know, as he says, traditionally a center, but can play on the wing. I don't know how he fits in. And to me, the biggest mystery, you know, and I don't want to go through the whole lineup if we don't have to, but the biggest mystery may be what happens with Cole Perfetti. Because right now, the Jets are going to have, in theory, if you have, you know, Scheifele, Ehlers, Connor as your top line, and Wheeler, Dubois, question mark, as your second line. To me, like, what ideally you would do is you'd have Perfetti and Vesalainen platooning in that second line wing role, and then you'd have Gustafson in that third line wing role taking over for Appleton potentially, and then you have Harkins. Let's say you sign Perreault for what's a reasonable deal, and you get yourself a veteran, you know, center that Paul Maurice is going to want. That to me is probably the way the Jets would line up, barring anything, you know, happening. But I do think that David Gustafson, I've said it for a while, and you guys know at this point, you got to see what you have with these guys. There's no point in not giving them a shot. I'm not saying play like bring up nothing but young guys and play nothing but young guys. That's obviously what the AHL is for a lot of times. But David Gustafson's put in his time at the AHL. Christian Vesalainen has put in his time at the AHL. Jansen Harkins the same. Now is the time for these guys to have roles on your team. They have to earn them. You don't just hand it to them because they're there. You bring in competition. You make them earn the spot in training camp. But if they do enough to earn that spot, to earn that trust, and you give them the responsibility of being that player for your team.
Well said there, Mr. Manouk. Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, Drew Mandel. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on this Wednesday evening. A special Illegal Curve Presents 2021 expansion draft coverage. The Jets selection is going to be made here in the next few minutes. We already know, of course, that it is going to be Mason Appleton, as there haven't been any, none of the leaks have been incorrect. So, I mean, we are keeping a track on that. If any of the leaks ever were wrong, we'd let you know. But so
the Kraken
far,
just took Brandon Tanev, Drew. I mean, speaking of, you know, third line players, I mean, if you think about it, Mason Appleton basically replaced Brandon Tanev. I mean, Jack Roslovic was there as well, right, boys? But I mean, I love it. I mean, I think that Tanev pick was a really smart one because he's a guy that you know exactly, you know, what he's going to bring, right? He's going to bring some of that tenacity and truculence, and he's going to be in your bottom six. But obviously the contract you don't love, but I think for Seattle, that was a very smart pick.
They certainly know exactly what they're getting in Brandon Tanev. Dave, before we go to break, we have a lot of questions about our new Illegal Curve merchandise. So why don't you tell the folks, turn your hat around, you hoodlum, and show them what the front of the hat looks like. Ezzy's shirts are actually not for sale. Those are custom Ginsburg shirts.
The
shirts
double that, XL, baby. Shout out to Ty from La Brokery for hooking us up.
There you go. Boom.
Yeah, we got the IC merch. I'm very happy. We got to give Ty a big shout out. He helped us out getting this going, and he even expedited it for us, which is awesome. So we could have for tonight's show. We were thinking about originally not having it till Friday. It's not yet for sale. We're going to be giving some shirts away. So make sure you are a subscriber to Illegal Curve Hockey. That's the only condition for which you can win a T-shirt from Illegal Curve Hockey, is that you need to be a subscriber to our channel. You know, preferably go to the website 6 or 7 times a day and, you know, and support our sponsors.
We want good takes, Dave M. Like, we want some we want scorching takes. Let's get the shirts and the hats out to people that really have those scorching takes.
Well, we're not giving hats out yet, Ez, but the point is we will be giving away some IC merch because, it's been too long, and we've got the shirts coming right now. We've got a bunch of different ones. We'll be wearing them over the course of the next few shows.
Do you have any armbands?
We do not have any armbands, no, but we do have...
Are you going to wear an armband, Ezzy?
I could wear an armband. I mean, especially with all the sweating I'm doing outside, I could use an armband, especially when I'm playing hoops outside, you know?
The point is that we'll have the hats will be coming, all different types of merch, but we really just wanted to start with shirts because, of course, you will get some stuff going for the end-of-season shows for these last four shows. So we'll have the old shirts. We're going to give a few away during our shows, and then, like as he says, to the people who have some great takes, some real engagement, and then what we're going to do is over the course of the summer, we're going to have we're going to create our online store. So the shirt, we're going to order some more shirts, we're going to order some hats because it seems like everybody seems to like the 3930s, and we've got a gray one up as well, which I'll be wearing when we come back from the break.
Look sharp, Dave.
Thank you, Ez.
Love that hat.
And
where's
so mine? Then,
where's Drew's?
Well, we were just had this all a test. We didn't know if people were going to love them.
True, but, I could use a hat. I don't know about you. Like,
people seem to be liking it.
Dave's a little selfish, Ezzy. What are we going to do? In any event, what we can say is we're going to have some giveaways for you. We'll give away some merch, and then the merchandise will be for sale in the coming weeks. So you can be sure that
it'll be for sale later.
Dave, what exactly? Clipboards and whistles. For Coach
in time
Lindell.
For the start of the 2021 Winnepeg Jets season, you'll be able to get your hands on some Illegal Curve merch.
On that note,
let's take a quick break, and when we come back, our buddy Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. You're listening, you're chatting, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. The wardrobe change has been complete. Dave Minuk wearing the new gray Illegal Curve t-shirt. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joining us in the bottom
left. We better get Mike a t-shirt, Drew.
We'll hook everybody up. Don't you worry. Mike
needs a haircut.
That's okay. You're looking good. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well, guys. The suspense is killing me. My goodness. if only some of these picks had leaked out ahead of time, right? We're all on the edge of our seats here.
That's true. I mean, just be thankful you're not ESPN, who paid however many billions of dollars to get scooped about 10 hours before their broadcast was set to begin. So, Mike, obviously, we know it's going to be Mason Appleton. The pick is going to be made here in a couple minutes. I got the second screen on my left here so I can keep track of it. What are your thoughts about the Kraken ending up with Mason Appleton over Dylan DeMello, and then subsequent, I guess, your thoughts on the Jets' selection or choice of protecting Logan Stanley over Dylan DeMello?
Well, look, I mean, the Jets would love to have been able to find a way to keep Mason Appleton, but I think with the forward group that they had to protect, I mean, unless they did something really bold, like asking Blake Wheeler to waive his no move, or I guess if Blake Wheeler had volunteered to do that, that perhaps they would have been able to protect Mason Appleton. but it just wasn't, you know, possible. So he was certainly the best of the forward group. Jansen Harkins, I think, if we had talked a year ago, we might have said Harkins and Appleton were kind of neck and neck, right? And of course, Mason Appleton had a real breakthrough season with the Jets, and Jansen Harkins could barely crack the lineup. So certainly Appleton, you know, by his performance this past year, kind of led the pack there. Look, I think it boils down to this, guys. The Jets knew that of Mason Appleton, Logan Stanley, and Dylan DeMello, they could only protect two of those three. And of course, one of those three. They had to expose two. And they were going to have to put two of them out there for the Kraken, of which they, you know, good chance they lose one of them. And I think if you rank those three from a Winnipeg perspective, the player that the Jets valued the most, I'm not saying that he's the best player at this point. I'm just talking about the player that the Jets valued the most is Logan Stanley. I would say the second, or the player that the Jets valued the second most was Dylan DeMello. And again, no slight to Mason Appleton, who the Jets would love to have kept, but he would have been third on that list. And so I think that's really what this boiled down to when they chose to protect Logan Stanley over Dylan DeMello. They wanted to make sure they at least keep their number one guy of those three. And they were going to risk either losing number two or number three. As it turns out, Mason Appleton, hey, the Jets will be thrilled that they are able to keep both Appleton and DeMello, add them to the mix, of course, with Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, and then your young guys like Billy Hainala and Dylan Sandberg. And, you know, certainly there's more work to be done on the blue line in the offseason. But I think this is a bit of a bullet dodged if you're the Winnipeg Jets. This is the best of a bad situation, really, is how this played out. Short of doing something really dramatic like a side deal, which to me, guys, that never made sense. I think the Jets probably learned a bit of a lesson with how the Vegas expansion draft played out, and they were wise to not go down that road again. So, yeah, Mason Appleton, his loss will sting, but I think they're better equipped to handle trying to fill his skates than they would have had they lost Dylan DeMello, for sure.
Mike, what do you make of the cap space that the Kraken are going to have? Because obviously, you know, Ron Francis, you know, the management group, I mean, they could have selected Carey Price at $10.5 million. You know, they could have taken Tarasenko at, you know, $7.5 million AAV, whatever it was. Right. I mean, you hear that, you know, they were trying to maybe sign, you know, Gabriel Landeskog. Like, do you think that, you know, this just means that there's, you know, some other, you know, big free agents that they're going to sign, or maybe they're going to, you know, trade for a few big ticket, you know, players? Like I said, like Tampa Bay makes a lot of sense, right? Like whether it's Alex Killorn, Tyler Johnson, you know, Johnson obviously with the Seattle connections, like what do you make of that? Like, are you surprised that they're just barely over the cap floor?
No, not really, Ezzy, and for this reason, there are a lot of teams in the NHL right now and in the coming days that are going to be trying to find ways out of salary cap hell because of the flat cap. If you're Ron Francis, you can now say to the other 30 teams, you know what, guys, we're open for business. If you want, basically use us as a brokerage. We're willing to help you get out of some of these terrible contracts, but boy, oh boy, is it going to cost you. And if you're Seattle, I mean, sure, you want to build a competitive team right out of the gate, no question about it. And I think as we look at the roster they're putting together, the division they play in, I see a team that should be competitive here in year one. But even more so, if you're the Kraken, you're also trying to build as quickly as you can a foundation, right, that sustains you for years to come. And they have a chance here, not just in this draft that goes Friday, Saturday. The next two drafts, guys, are supposed to be extremely deep. They could stockpile all kinds of picks here and prospects and really build an impressive, you know, farm system and prospect pool on the fly. And I think if we look at Vegas, and we all talk about Vegas, you know, and what they were able to do in year one, impressive for sure. And Vegas, they've kind of done nothing but win. I don't think you'd look at Vegas, though, and say that they are absolutely overflowing with all kinds of guys knocking at the door because they trade all those guys, right? They've traded all their they've traded Nick Suzuki, You know, they've traded Eric Brandstrom. They just traded Cody Glass now. So they're in a win now mode. I think Seattle's probably going to try and do more of a balance here. Sure, they'd like to win now, but they also want to build something. And so I think that cap space could really be weaponized if you're Seattle. And so some of the things that didn't happen today, you know, talk of whether it was Tarasenko and then taking him and then flipping him and maybe eating some of his contract. That's not to say that that couldn't still happen. And they're in a real good position where they can now say to every other general manager, if you need help, give us a call. We'll tell you what it's going to cost you, but we can be your ticket out of a big problem.
Wednesday evening, you're watching a special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. IC presents expansion draft coverage 2021. We remind everybody, Friday night, we'll also have a special show dedicated to the first round of the NHL draft, 7 p.m. Friday night. Be sure to join us back here on our YouTube channel for that coverage. Our guest right now talking about the expansion draft is our good friend Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press.
Let me say this, guys. I'll be really impressed if the insiders can leak all of Friday's draft picks 10 hours ahead of time. Let's see them do that.
That's right. I said the same thing off the start of the broadcast this evening, right, Mike. That's really impressive. Anybody can, you know, find out what's already written on a piece of paper.
Buffalo's taking Owen Power, Mike. That's easy.
Yeah, there you go. As he's the real insider.
Yeah.
You know what? What I was going to say to you, though, is I don't know. Drew called you our very good friend, but we haven't been invited to any of these golf outings you keep going on. So I'm not so sure. And I hate golf, so it doesn't really matter. But I'm sure as you and Drew are a little insulted that they're never invited to these golf games.
Like Kevin O over Dave M? Like, come on, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, I could have used it as part of my Explore MB. I would have driven out the Falcon. Just saying.
Yeah.
I will say this, a good friend of the program, Kenny Weeb, he arranged the membership in that outing yesterday. So if you need Kenny's number, I can get you in touch with him to give him help. By the way, Dave, you said you hate golf. I can tell you that after yesterday's round, I hate golf a lot more than I did before yesterday's round as well.
Mike, as you well know, the only golf course you and I should be golfing is Kildonan Park.
Or a miniature golf course, right?
Well, I'm fine with that too. I like mini golf. Don't like real golf. Okay, but getting back to hockey. So, Mike, what do you make of this? Bruce Garriott of the Ottawa Sun was talking about this, the idea that the Jets were looking to move Mason Appleton. So if the notion is that the Jets didn't want to lose DeMelo, but were also looking to move Appleton, what was the play? Because if Appleton's gone, who do you have left to lose other than Dylan DeMelo, who in theory you don't want to lose?
Right. Yeah, that was a real head scratcher to me. The only thing I thought that might make sense is if the Jets were looking to move Mason Appleton, that it was to Seattle, that that maybe there was a talk of a deal where they would say, we'll throw something in, or we'll trade you Mason Appleton if you pick Sammy Niku or Chris Thorburn. I mean,
yeah.
You know, basically shades of the side deal of a few years ago. But there was no side deal. Seattle ultimately chose to take Appleton. I mean, guys, there may have been a bit of gamesmanship to that as well. Like, are the Jets, were they shopping Appleton to theoretically increase his value to Seattle? I mean, I don't know. It seems a little interesting. We're going to talk with Kevin Cheveldayoff tomorrow, and I doubt he'll give us much insight into that. I mean, we'll try. We'll no doubt we'll ask him, hey, what was this sort of rumbling about shopping Mason Appleton all about? But you're right. That didn't make a whole lot of sense because it wouldn't solve your problem, right? You were then almost guaranteed then you were going to lose Dylan DeMelo at that point. So it was a bit of a head scratcher for sure. I can tell you this, guys. I mean, I know Twitter and social media is a bit of buzz. A lot of people didn't like the fact that the Jets exposed DeMelo at all. They felt that that was sort of reckless. I know you, Drew. Yeah, for sure. You know, one thing to keep in mind, of course, is GMs talk, and no doubt there's posturing and whatnot that happens. But I believe that the Jets had a real good internal sense of Logan Stanley's value, not just to them, but certainly around the league and especially to Seattle. And this was a case of asset management and to a degree risk management. Sure, they were gambling a bit, but I think the Jets absolutely believed, and I think they had good reason to believe, that if they had protected Dylan DeMello and left Logan Stanley exposed, that if the choice was Stanley or Appleton, they were going to lose Logan Stanley to Seattle. And that if it was DeMello versus Appleton, it was a little more of a toss-up and perhaps leaning in the direction that Seattle ultimately went, which was Appleton. That there was so many defensemen available to Seattle, whether it was in just picking off other teams' rosters or as we've seen, you know, with signing like a Tyson Berry, a UFA kind of deal. Adam Larson. Edmonton's other UFA on my mind. But the Jets were probably covered. And in fact, Seattle would want sort of the cost certainty with Appleton and the higher, you know, maybe the higher upside, the younger age and his versatility. So for sure they gambled, but I think it was a gamble worth taking and one that, you know, at the end of the day, they kept the two guys that they wanted the most out of those three, or at least the two guys whose absence would have left a more significant impact than the one that they ultimately lost.
Mike McIntyre, the Winnipeg Free Press, our guest. You're watching, you're chatting, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a special edition of the show, the expansion draft coverage they just announced in the broadcast that Mason Appleton Shocker. Has been selected. Whoa, I didn't see it. Coming out of the left field there.
Can't wow. believe that.
Yeah, I know. Everybody take a deep breath. I know. We'll try and
like
have to...
We need, like, the screen should be, like, flashing. Shocked.
Yeah. Breaking shocked. News. Yeah.
Exactly. Confirmed. Right. In any event, you know, Mike, the talk, of course, this entire offseason and last offseason was how did the Jets upgrade the defense? How did the Jets upgrade the defense? Kevin Cheveldayoff spoke about it recently. I mean, it's clear that something is going to have to give. The insiders, Pierre LeBrun, Darren Dreger, yesterday they reported about the Jets having some interest along with the Montreal Canadiens in Rasmus Ristolainen out of Buffalo. I mean, Ristolainen, for whatever he is, his analytics aren't great. It would be a charitable way of putting that. What do you think, Ristolainen? Do you think that's a viable option as a new member potentially of the Winnipeg Jets defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, where there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire for sure, guys. And this is not the first time the Jets have been linked to Rasmus Ristolainen. There's been talks with Buffalo about Ristolainen going back a couple of years now. And I can tell you there was more talks at this most recent trade deadline about Rasmus Ristolainen. Mm-hmm. So he's a name for sure that the Jets have some interest in. I believe he's only got 1 year left, though, right, before he's UFA. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, does that bring the price down? Is the price for Rasmus Ristolainen now cheaper than it would have been, you know, for sure a couple seasons ago? No question about it. You know, so I wouldn't necessarily just sit here today and say that's the guy the Jets are going to go get. I don't know that that would be their number one target. I'm not sure who their number one target is. I mean, ideally, you'd love to say it's Dougie Hamilton, right? My goodness, Dougie Hamilton would just be, he would fix a lot of things on this blue line. I just don't see it happening, guys. The Jets would probably have to move somebody from their core to make room financially for that to happen. You know, a couple guys that Seattle just got today, I honestly thought another name that the Jets at the trade deadline were very interested in is Jamie Oleksiak. And of course, you know, I thought, even when today began, there was part of me thinking like maybe something happens, whether Seattle is the team that takes him, but then maybe it's a sign and trade or a flip. And mm-hmm. I guess that could still happen, right? I mean, it's
5 years, $23 million is what Oleksiak's contract with Seattle is.
Right. I mean, at this stage, we assume that Seattle signed him for Seattle. Is it possible they've signed him for somebody else, though? I mean, we'll find out in pretty short order, I guess. And even, guys, to me, Adam Larson would have made a lot of sense for the Jets, like as a potential free agent. But it would appear that, you know, door is now closed again, unless there's more to that, unless that's a sign and trade. And we're going to have to wait to see what Seattle's thinking is with some of these guys. Like, are they signing these guys for themselves or for others? But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting week. Like, the Jets cannot simply return the same faces. I'd be surprised if Derek Forbert or Tucker Poolman are back. I'd be stunned if Jordy Benn is back. Like, I think those three UFAs are probably as good as gone.
Yeah.
So who does that open the door for? Well, you'd say, well, that opens the door for Ville Heinola and Dylan Samberg. And maybe it does. But I also think you can't just go into next season hoping that those guys can establish themselves right away. Like, you need to bring something else in, preferably at least one top four guy. And you're either doing it via free agency or a trade. So, you know, I think, you know, in the next week here, we should get a real sense of what the Jets' plan is in that regard, because they just can't go with a Vezina, you know, perennial Vezina winner or candidate and the forward core that they have and not do something about the blue line.
Worth pointing out before we, as he asked your next question, both Larson and Oleksiak received full no trade clauses. The contract details just trickling out as you're joining us right now, Mike. This is just, you can call this breaking news if you want, but no trade clauses for Oleksiak the first 3 years of his 5-year deal, and then a modified no trade the last 2 years. And Larson gets a full no trade for the first 2 years, and then a modified no trade for the last 2 years. So it does seem like both those guys are right, set to be long-term pieces in Seattle, at least for the next few seasons at the very least.
Mike, unless I'm missing something here, like I'm refreshing Twitter and I'm following, the insiders, Darren Dreger, Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnston. I haven't seen any side deals announced, and there are two picks that specifically, and obviously, we could go through all of the picks, but like two teams, two picks that really, surprised me. And I imagine they surprised you as well. Gavin Bayreuther, who, Dave would know, career, pretty much most of his pro career has been with the Texas Stars in the AHL, 27 years old. And, obviously, that's from Columbus. We were all expecting Max Domi to be selected. And then Minnesota, Carson Soucy, a guy that's, played 3 years now, I believe, with the Minnesota Wild. But he's 26 years old, doesn't have a huge offensive upside. He's got some physicality to his game. But obviously, Kaapo Kähkönen was the guy that, a lot of people thought the Seattle Kraken would take there. So, I mean, those are two players that I would have to think there's some type of side deal. The question that I had for you, though, Mike, is like, how many side deals do you expect there to be? Because, there has to at least be a couple, doesn't there?
Yeah. I would throw John Quenville's name into the mix as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like Calvin DeHaan, right? Like I thought for sure Seattle was going to take DeHaan, Mike.
Or even Zadorov. And if maybe it was Zadorov to then flip him to somebody else. But Quenville, I believe Quenville's a UFA too, right? Like, I mean, was there going to be a John Quenville bidding war? Like they could have. I don't think so. So you're right. I mean, that's probably a guy that might be the Chris Thorburn, right? Where they don't even sign the guy.
Right.
But there's got to be more to the story. And so, right. So did Chicago pay something to not touch DeHaan? I assume that would be the guy they would have. Or I don't know, maybe Malcolm Subban. Did they not want Malcolm Subban to be? And I saw some mocks that had him going. Yeah, I think we're going to hear probably four or five. And I don't know if the rules preclude them coming out during this broadcast, like, or are they waiting till tomorrow when the roster freeze kind of thaws and then they'll do it? I don't know. I mean, but I do expect that we're probably four or five at least that were made.
Well, if you remember back, sorry for interrupting, but if you remember back to the Vegas one, the side deals were announced, I think, right there and then, because Marc-Andre Fleury was actually a trade. He wasn't
right.
He wasn't an expansion. I mean, he was obviously part of the expansion draft, but he was officially a trade. So it seems odd that there's been absolute radio silence, to your point, Mike, about, just nothing else. Like it's been so anticlimactic that you wonder, they only got about another 10 minutes or so left in the broadcast. I believe it's only supposed to be about 90 minutes long. So you wonder if at 8:30, that's going to, when, the floodgates are going to open and we're going to start to hear about all these side deals that they managed to keep hush hush so far.
Right. By the way, Drew, the 90-minute-long broadcast was 89 minutes too long in my eyes.
Especially when everybody knew all the picks.
Right, that's what I mean. They should have just put it up on the screen and then, I don't know, gone to a rerun or something. Yeah, it is. It's puzzling for sure because I suspect a lot of people, even despite knowing the picks, have probably tuned in to think, well, let's sort of see all the other shoes kind of drop here. And so far, there's been nothing. So I guess we just have to wait a little longer.
But you also wonder perhaps that they're holding that till the end because of that reason, Mike, because all the picks were leaked, that they know, okay, well, nobody's going to stay tuned if we leak, if we give everything at the beginning of the show. I agree. I thought they'd intersperse it a little bit, but it almost seems like likely that they'll do kind of like a news dump at the end, just because then at least you've stuck around this long, we'll give it to you right now. That's the only thing I can think of, because otherwise it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Kind of like how Ezzy usually gets the last question of the three. You guys save the best to last, right?
Exactly.
Don't say that out loud. That's our secret.
No, but right now it's not his question. It's my question. Now, Mike, going back to the Jets, you know, we've talked about this. You know, it's funny. All the headlines have been like, well, what are the Jets going to do about their defense? And you know, that was written in 21 right, or 2020, and now it's being written again in 21. Kevin Shevelyov can't go through another year with what he's done. And to your point that you said, they've got a number of UFAs that are most likely not even coming back. They've got young guys. You don't really want to rush a Johnny Kovacevic, who's better off 6'5", big boy on the right side, but isn't he better off playing in the Manitoba Moose maybe for his third season as a pro to start? Then you get him into the NHL. Like, but doesn't it, like, it's not, and just especially if they would have lost Dylan DeMello, trying to fill two spots from via either trade or UFA for this Jets team. And again, I can't believe how many people say to me, oh, it's like this, they do it like this. And I'm like, well, if they would have done it like that, why didn't they do it last year?
Right.
Right. If they needed to do it like that, which they didn't last year and they didn't replace them, well, there's a reason. So how does this team move forward?
So, you know, it's interesting. We saw on the weekend, guys, of course, as teams scrambled to put themselves in the best position before they submitted their protection list, we saw a number of blue liners switch teams and some big names, right? Ryan Ellis. Mm-hmm. There's a guy. I mean, Ryan Ellis would look great in a Jets jersey. Even Ryan Graves and that trade, not a huge price. Nick Leddy was another one, right? So I think the idea, and then we see a team like Seattle go out and sign Alexiak and Larson. The idea that, oh, it's impossible to go out and get a top four defenseman, that myth has kind of been blown out of the water just by what's happened the last few days or the last week, right? There are guys available for sure. And we know there's more guys available. You know, Seth Jones is certainly on the market, and we have to wait and see kind of how that shakes out. You know, and Dougie Hamilton is obviously the big name UFA, but there's other guys out there. I am very curious to see like what the Jets ultimately do. Do they, just to throw a name out, a guy that I thought the Jets might have been in on last year and ultimately not a peep was Travis Hamonic. Like, do the Jets, is that a guy that they now, and I'm not saying he'd be plan A or even plan B necessarily, but is he a guy that they have in the back pocket potentially that they say, you know what, maybe we go and we take a look on a cheapish 1 year kind of deal here. There's certainly some options for sure. I mean, what about Alex Edler? Would Alex Edler be a guy that they at all look at? You know, you'd have to be wary for sure, his injury history, his age and whatnot, but I guess depends on the price, right? But for sure, I mean, you want to go into this season, if you're trying to win a Stanley Cup, and from everything they say, that's what the goal is with this core that's not getting younger. The captain certainly isn't. You can't go in and potentially waste another year while you try and get your blue line figured out. You have to address that, and the time is now.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. Andrew Kopp and his status has sort of been a big factor and a big talking point this offseason. Put on your prognostication hat, and how do you see that playing out? Does Andrew Kopp end up here on a long-term deal? Does he end up getting traded? Because it seems almost impossible that they would let him walk into free agency next year. So if you had to choose between one or the other, which way are you leaning?
Yeah, if this goes to arbitration again, mm-hmm. I mean, he's as good as gone, right? You're not, because an arbitration award would be a 1-year binding arbitration, walking him right into UFA. And a guy that you've now fought with at an arbitration hearing twice in 3 years is not then committing long term. Like, he's gone. So to me, one of two things happens. Yeah, either you get a long term extension. And I think that's going to be a difficult negotiation, not just because of who his agent is, Kurt Overhart, you know, a tough agent for sure. Jets don't exactly have a great history with Kurt Overhart either. but also, I suspect Andrew Kopp's camp would like, you know, his annual average value to probably start with a five on a long-term deal. And the Jets would probably like that with a high three or maybe a low four. Certainly some things may help the Jets. I mean, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins extension with the Oilers, I believe he's five and a dime or whatever. Like, that probably helps a little bit if you're the Jets, but for sure it's going to be a difficult negotiation. But I'll say this, I'd be at least slightly encouraged by the fact that, you know, if the Jets felt that there is zero chance that we can sign this guy long-term, to me, the time to trade him would have been prior to Saturday's roster freeze and getting your protected, because then the Jets could have protected Mason Appleton.
Mason Appleton, sure.
And so to me, that was at least a slightly encouraging sign that there's some optimism there for sure. And, you know, I think it'll be a difficult negotiation, but I believe Andrew Kopp really enjoys playing for the Winnipeg Jets. No question. He's not. This isn't Jacob Trouba part two. This isn't a guy who has made it clear he doesn't want to be here. I think Andrew Kopp loves being here. I think he really enjoys the role that he has, the responsibilities. We know he's very tight with Mark Scheifele, and we know he doesn't wear a letter, but he's, for all intents and purposes, he is part of the leadership group. So I think they will try to find a way, but for sure the pressure is on. It has to come to one of two conclusions here in relative short order. And if you're the Jets, you'd like to get some cost certainty ahead of free agency, right? Just to know exactly what you're working with, because they also have to get Neil Pionk signed. I was going to say signed, Pionk signed. but you want to know what those guys, what their numbers are, so you know how much money you have to play with.
Absolutely. Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. He's a good friend of this program. Mike, we'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your evening. Get ready for what is set to be a very hectic week, 2 weeks from now, right through, I guess, the arbitration period, if it goes to that, for Andrew Kopp, and the draft on Friday, Saturday, and then free agency next Wednesday. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
You bet, guys. Take care.
There he goes. Thanks, Mike. Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press joining us here on the program. Let's take our final commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the expansion draft. The actual selections are mercifully coming to an end. Only one team left, that being the Vancouver Canucks. And then we will see if there are any side deals announced before we wrap up the program for this Wednesday evening. Much more to come. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Wednesday evening, we're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Minuk with yet another wardrobe change.
Number three.
It's like watching J-Lo in her prime right here with you changing those shirts all the time. Another one of our new Illegal Curve t-shirts, which are soon going to be available for purchase. You can stay tuned to all of our social media and, of course, our website, illegalcurve.com, for when those will be available. Get your hands on some Illegal Curve swag. Get your hands on some Illegal Curve merchandise. Buy an extra couple t-shirts for your friends and family. If there's a Mr. Irrelevant in an expansion draft, as in the last pick in an expansion draft, it counts as Cole Lind of the Vancouver Canucks. The broadcast has officially come to an end. There was nothing the least bit interesting about it, unless you count the octopus that made the selection for the Detroit Red Wings. But an anticlimactic hour and a half after all the picks had been selected earlier, and now we wait to see if there's any more side deals between now and, let's say, the end of the evening. And we'll keep a very close eye on those. So Doesn't look like it. I mean, I got to be honest. I'm not sure if we're going to see anything, and that'll certainly be a bit of a bummer as it pertains to this expansion draft, gentlemen.
Well, yeah, and there's going to be some trades. I mean, I would be shocked if there are zero trades. Like, just think about that, right? Like, Gavin Bayreuther, we talked about it. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. So it doesn't make sense why you would take him over Max Domi. And I mentioned, you know, Carson Soucy on Minnesota. You know, we talked about John Quenneville with Mike, right? Like, you could have had Calvin DeHaan or Nikita Zadorov. I'm pretty sure Zadorov was left unprotected.
He was unprotected.
Yeah. So it doesn't, and I mean, John Quenneville, you know, he's kind of like a fringe NHLer, right? Like, he's a guy that's, you know, nobody's expecting him to have like a breakout season. Like, all due respect to John Quenneville, right? And we don't even know if Seattle's going to keep him. But when you could have had Calvin DeHaan, like, DeHaan would be a top six defenseman for you. So we're expecting some deals, but there is a roster freeze right now, right, guys? So I believe that ends tomorrow afternoon, if I'm not mistaken, or tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow at noon, but I don't know how that factors in with the Kraken. I mean, they were exempt from the trade freeze.
They're not subject to it.
Right. So, I mean, you would think that any trades that they've made, if they've made any, would be eligible to be announced immediately. Like, you know, during the course of that 90-minute broadcast, like it was. I mean, the rules are the same as it was for Vegas, you know, 4 years ago. So I'm just not quite clear if there's another shoe that's going to drop. When is it going to drop? Because right now, it just seems quiet, and it seems that there's nothing going on, which is really odd, because you look at the roster that the Kraken have put together here, and the decisions that they've made. It's, you know, and I understand weaponizing cap space, and I understand not wanting to tie yourself up into some bad contracts, but there were better players available that they seem to have just decided not to take.
Well, and to me, that, you know, just logically, right? Like, I don't know, you know, which players they're necessarily targeting. Like, I mentioned earlier, guys, like, you know, Tampa Bay is clearly looking to move either Alex Killorn or Tyler Johnson, right? Like, so I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys is traded to Seattle. You know, in terms of some of the bigger names that are out there, right? Like, we've heard that, you know, Gabriel Landeskog and Seattle weren't able to come to an agreement. But if they were going after Gabriel Landeskog, would it surprise anybody if they were going after some of these other big names that are out there, right? Like, we know, you know, Jack Eichel is out there. Like, wouldn't that be amazing if the Seattle Kraken were able to trade for Jack Eichel? And obviously, you know, they don't necessarily have the assets to make that type of move. I'm just saying, like, that's the only thing that would make sense to me here, is that, you know, the Kraken are going to go after, you know, some of these free agents. And obviously, trades make more sense to me. Because let's be honest, guys, like, how many, you know, pending UFAs are really appealing in terms of, you know, high-end talent, right? Like, Taylor Hall is going to re-sign in Boston. We already, you know that from reports earlier today, that he's most likely going to sign a 4 or 5 year deal. So yeah, the Blue Jackets have passed up on some good players, you know, such as Max Domi or Vladimir Tarasenko or others. So the only thing that makes sense to me, Drew, is, you know, they have other players that they're planning on acquiring in, you know, the next couple days, the next week or so.
Cap Friendly reporting that the Kraken have made no trades with any teams prior to the expansion draft, which would theoretically be announced right now. So it sounds like this is their roster until they decide to make some trades or make some signings, and there weren't any side deals. Vegas had 10 side deals in the course of their expansion draft, and it seems like if this Cap Friendly tweet is to be believed, then I have no reason to doubt them. They've made zero side deals, which really makes some of their selections just perplexing. Like, why are you? I understand that you don't want to get.
It doesn't even make sense, because the reality is, why wouldn't you make selections that you know you can flip? You know, why not? Why not select X?
To your point, Calvin DeHaan, Nikita Zadorov, like those guys.
All these guys would have been easily flippable to another team for draft picks, even if you wanted to, like, you know, bulk up for the next couple of years. So that is perplexing. And you know, guys, we can't pretend like Ron Francis is some, you know, newbie who didn't know what he was doing. This guy's been in the NHL a long time. He knew exactly what he's doing. So the only thing I would say, and again, the one thing we try and avoid doing here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is making rushing to conclusion. And I think that's, well, maybe we don't necessarily do that, but I think we should do that, because it's easy to you know, sit here and lob bombs at Seattle. And believe me, I'm not saying teams are infallible and you don't make fun of them. That you can do. But I'm just saying, I have to imagine that they have some sort of vision that, that the brain trust in Seattle has created, that their drafting will make sense to the point Drew made earlier, once this kind of plays out. But you're right. I mean, this just to hear what Drew just said has you scratching your head a little bit. It's rather perplexing to think that these guys didn't do anything other than make the selections from the 30 teams that they did select from.
Well, I have to wonder if Ron Francis overplayed his hand. You know, we've heard, throughout the course of the last couple weeks, really the last few months, that Ron Francis, you know, was asking an arm and a leg for any side deals, as is certainly right. His prerogative. But you can ask for an arm and a leg 2 months ago. As you get closer to the deadline being the last couple of days, the prices have to come down. So if he, didn't come down at all, and if he overplayed his hand, knowing that the general manager should theoretically be smarter 4 years since the Vegas draft, you wonder if he maybe misjudged the situation. And I don't know that to be a fact. So I'm not, this isn't intended to be a criticism. It's just sitting here, the expansion draft is now done. You're waiting for the side deals that everyone assumed were going to happen, and it sounds like there aren't any, then a lot of the, expansion draft selections don't make any sense. And I'm just not really sure that what the Kraken are really setting themselves up to do moving forward, Ezzy.
Yeah, and the only thing that makes sense is they have, some players that they have targeted via trade and more so via trade, but maybe also through free agency. But, like, look at, sure. Tampa Bay, for example, right? Like, Yanni Gourde, I think everyone agrees that was the right pick. You know, if you just base it on talent alone, he's most likely your number one center right now, right? Like, Jared McCann can play center, but I think, we expect him most likely on this team to be a winger. But when you're talking about Max Domi, for example, right? Like, he can play center, he can play wing. Like, you could have had him for nothing, right? Like, mm-hmm. You could have selected him or maybe traded him. And same thing goes with, Chicago. Like, why would you pick John Quenneville? Like, either they purposely pick players that they're not going to sign or take up very little cap room, right? Like, Quenneville, I imagine, is below $1 million, right? He's probably near the league average. So all you're doing there is you're almost just kind of giving away your selection and you're saying, well, that's not really going to eat up a lot of cap space, right? But like if you're talking about, whether it's Seth Jones or whether it's a Jack Eichel, you have to think like what would they be moving to acquire that player? Like I don't see Seattle giving up the second overall pick, right? Like I think there's a good chance they could get Matthew Beniers from the University of Michigan, right? Like they could take other players. It could be Brant Clark. It could be, another player. But I think a lot of people think Matty Beniers is going to go second overall, Dave. So I don't see them giving away that second overall pick. But if you're going to acquire a big name player like Eichel or Jones, you're going to have to give up something significant. You're going to have to give up one of the players that you drafted. It's very surprising that no side deals have been announced yet, Drew.
It's all very, very odd to your point. I mean, I totally understand not wanting to lock your team up with bad contracts because that makes sense. There's no point in saddling yourselves with contracts you don't like. But, a guy like Max Domi, it's not like your forward group. You look at this Kraken forward group and it's nothing to write home about. I mean, it's fine at best. There's nobody that I would describe as a first-line player that's going to drive a line on their own that would be a first-line player among that group. I mean, who's the best forward that they've got? Yanni Gourde? Jordan Eberle?
Their top line would be Yanni Gourde, Jared McCann, and Jordan Eberle. That's who I would say is most likely their top line.
I would agree with you. And I mean, those
based
are
on what they have now, because obviously one of those guys could get moved still.
Yeah, you never know. But I mean, to take a one-year flyer on a guy like Max Domi, seems like that would have been a better decision than taking a player that I've literally never heard of. I mean,
he's only played like 20 NHL games, right?
So yeah, there's just a lot of, you saw the list of players that were available.
Yeah.
That weren't protected. And you compare that list to their selections. And I know it had a hefty price tag attached to it, but they seem to have left a lot of good players on the board And I get that they're doing that for cap space. But to me, that seems like a bit of an opportunity lost. That you would have taken all those guys, but you probably should have.
Yeah.
Like, who's the face of the franchise? Again, not that that should necessarily matter, but you knew.
Giordano?
Probably Giordano. Like, and he's got 1 year left on his deal. When Marc-Andre Fleury.
I'd be shocked if he isn't named the captain. Yeah.
Right. When Marc-Andre Fleury got selected by Vegas, you knew that Marc-Andre Fleury was going to be the backbone of that team. You know, with all due respect, Chris Driedger, great story, good Winnipeg guy, fought the long, hard fight to become an NHL regular. How confident are you that he can be a clear-cut number one goaltender in the NHL moving forward? You've given him
he's a good goalie, Drew. I mean, I don't think anybody predicts he's going to win the Vezina Trophy, but I mean, he's a really good goalie.
He's a good goalie, but I think he'll succeed.
So is Vanacek. Yeah, it's a 1A, 1B. It's a 1A, 1B right now.
I don't know. Driedger at 3 years at $3.5 million, just for a guy who's never been a number one goaltender in the NHL. It just seems like, you know, there's a lot of questions I have about how they've built this roster and the selections that they've taken.
Yeah, one of the things that Dave said that I think, you know, really kind of rings true for me is that even if you're not planning on necessarily keeping like a Calvin DeHaan or a Nikita Zadorov or, you know, whoever, you know, they could have taken, you don't have the option of moving that player. Like, you haven't collected, I don't think, enough assets to move, right? Like, a lot of these players that they have taken, like Alexander True, you know, we talked about a big 6'6", you know, Danish prospect. Like, you know, you have some prospects that you might move. Cole Lind is another guy.
Nikolai Ehlers' cousin.
Yes, they mentioned that on the broadcast.
That was
the interesting puzzling point about Alexander True, is that he's Nikolai Ehlers' cousin. That should tell you a little bit about Alexander True and his career so far in the NHL.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens here. But the only thing I think that really makes sense, guys, is that Seattle is in the midst of other moves, and there are already plans for other moves. And I think, you know, a lot of those might be via trade. Like, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, I would see like an Alex Killorn or a Tyler Johnson coming to Seattle. And obviously Killorn is a guy that could probably play in your top six. Tyler Johnson at this point is more likely a third or fourth line guy. So there are going to be other players like that. But, you know, I look at that defense and, you know, it's not bad. Like, you know, they took Vince Dunn. He's going to be in your top four. Jamie Oleksiak's going to be in your top four. And most likely, if they keep these players, your top pair is going to be Mark Giordano and Adam Larson. So that's a pretty good top four. Like, again, it's not the best top four in the entire league, guys. But
their defense is strong. Their defense has some strength to it, and I can see how their defense, frankly, is better than the Jets' defense. And I say that not fully tongue in cheek. I mean, you look at that defense, and to your point, Ezzy, Giordano, Larson, Oleksiak, Carson Soucy, he can play certainly. Vince Dunn, Jeremy Lauzon. I mean, they've Hayden Fleury, who's still sort of a younger player who's trying to get a first real opportunity to be a regular. They have some talent on the back end. But their forwards are pretty thin.
Yeah.
And there was an opportunity there. Do you need a Vince Dunn that badly? Or are you better off taking a guy like Tarasenko and maybe seeing what you can get with him for a couple of years? It's not like, I understand not taking Carey Price given
it's a lot of money.
Five years and $10.5 million.
One of the highest paid guys in the league. Yeah,
right. I can sort of understand.
If you had 3 years left, Drew, it would have been fine. But 5 years left, it's too much.
Yeah, it's just. I mean, I don't know. A lot of these decisions are very curious to me, Dave.
I think what it comes down to, and I'll just reiterate the point I made earlier: the armchair GMs that were writing articles and saying this is exactly the team that you're going to draft from this play. Like, again, coaching staffs, head offices, front offices—they're not infallible. They can make mistakes, but the reality is that they're going to implement their own vision, not a vision that they read on The Athletic, that this is who you need to draft because these are the guys available. So people can poo-poo all they want and dump on these guys because it's easy to do. And all I'm saying is you just have to have a little more patience. I mean, and again, to me, it's we're sitting here, you know, if the draft has is barely over and already we're saying Seattle's the worst team ever. Now, again, I would look at it and say it's very shocking. They didn't make any side deals. They didn't acquire any assets. They didn't just select some players in order to flip them to teams that would want them, you know, like the Jets maybe want to get someone from Dallas, for example. Like they want to get Alexiak. Okay, so there you go. There's a player from the Jets. The Jets would, you know, seamlessly fit into the Jets on the left side of the D, right? But so I agree with you, Drew. It seems unusual now. But all I'm saying is I know we live in an instant gratification society, but we just got to get away from this mindset of instantly judging. You know, it's like making a trade. Patrick Laine for Pierre-Luc Dubois. Oh, winner and loser. Like right now, everybody looks like a loser, right? So it's the kind of thing that you have to judge years down the road. You can't judge it right now. It's too fresh. There's absolutely no basis for which we don't even know what Ron Francis' vision is, right? So we don't really have, like right now, it seems curious. I agree with you. Like there's definitely a curiosity that this brings about. But I would just say before we start, you know, I mean, I haven't been on Twitter because obviously we're doing the show, but I can only imagine the amount of bashing that Seattle's taking right now. And again, I'm not sitting here trying to be like, you know,
well, let me stop you right there, Dave. Okay. Here's a report, a tweet from Pierre LeBrun just came out a minute ago saying any trades Seattle may have in the hopper will be finalized and announced after the trade freeze is lifted at 1 p.m. Eastern tomorrow.
So that's, by the way, that's embarrassing.
You said that earlier. Didn't I mention that earlier?
Yeah,
but it doesn't make any sense. You have
I'm just joking, guys. It doesn't make sense.
That's embarrassing by the NHL. If I was ESPN, I'd be freaking livid because there's absolutely no value to waiting till 2 o'clock on a Thursday, which for the record, tomorrow you're supposed to be releasing the schedule. So really that should be your focus, the regular season schedule, not really like focused on all these trades. Why wouldn't you do it tonight when there's all this excitement surrounding it? So now again, that kind of explains, and I want to say like who was right in terms of having a little patience, Drew.
but my point though, Dave, I mean, 4 years ago, Vegas announced their trades in the middle of the broadcast. It was all part of the broadcast. I don't know why things are different unless this is the way Seattle wants it. And I would have to assume that's the case. Why? Because the rules of the expansion draft were the same, you know, 4 years ago for Vegas as they were for Seattle tonight. So it's all very bizarre that whatever trades they might have, and LeBrun says he suspects that there will be a few over the coming days, that they're waiting for these trades. It sounds like maybe they weren't completely culminated in time, or that, you know, they're just sort of still trying to dot the I's and cross the T's on them. It's all very odd timing, but I guess it's something to pay attention to. You know,
well, I'm glad though that there are going to be trades, because it made no sense that there would be zero trades, because some of these picks just simply don't make any sense. Like you just wouldn't take a pending UFA like Bayreuth or over Max Domi or any other player really on Columbus. And, you know, going back to what we were saying before in terms of like what the plan is for the Kraken, right? Like we talked about, you know, some of the top UFAs like Dougie Hamilton or Gabriel Landeskog. Like it's actually a pretty decent UFA class. Like, you know, I'm just looking at the list here. We had Luke Fox on 2 or 3 weeks ago, like Philip Deneau, right? Like David Krejci, like these are solid, you know, second line centers, right? You know, Ryan Suter is out there. Like everybody thinks, you know, he's going to go to Long Island, right, guys? Because Lou Lamoriello has been clearing all this cap space. But there's some interesting names out there after Landeskog and after Dougie Hamilton. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Seattle has targeted one of those players as well.
It's all very interesting. It doesn't, I mean, here's
and by
more.
The way, if, for the record, why would the NHL not announce that? Unless, well, so, you know, I mean, again, to answer my own question, because then they knew nobody was watching the broadcast. If you knew that no trades were going to be announced, why would you watch the broadcast? If all 30, like the NHL is, I don't know, it's kind of embarrassing. Like it's the leakiest ship of all time. Like that is just like every guy, like Frank, to his credit, again, like he has no reason to protect the NHL. If he gets news, he can do whatever he wants with it. If he wants to report it, he should. But but at the same time, like I just think it's hilarious that you knew this. And I guess most people, how many people would have tuned in? I can't imagine any, because the reality is, other than just the three of us talk and Mike
naturally,
but I really don't know how many people would have tuned in to watch 30 picks made that you already know who those 30 picks are. Well, and you knew that by 10:30 this morning.
to what Mike McIntyre said when he joined us, you know, about, you know, an hour ago or so, if everybody knew what the NHL draft the picks were going to be on Friday night's first round, nobody would watch the first round either. So it doesn't make any sense the way that they set it up for tonight. And, well, clearly it's not going to be an issue going forward because there's unlikely to be expansion in any time soon. So this will be the last time we have to talk about protective lists and expansion drafts. Yeah, Quebec City, you know, maybe when they go to 34 teams, but I think that'll be at least a few decades away from now. This from Matt Larkin on Twitter. He asked NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly for clarification on Seattle's trade privileges. Bill Daly said any expansion draft related transactions had to be submitted before the deadline this morning, and follow-up transactions can't be announced until 1 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. So I guess Seattle maybe just didn't complete any transactions before their deadline this morning, which is, again, hard to believe and oddly timed, to say the best of the situation, I would suggest. In any event, more tomorrow and more Friday. So let's give a quick rundown of what we have in store for everybody over the next couple days. Of course, any news from the Winnipeg Jets perspective, any trades, if they're making any, if anybody gets signed, we'll have all that latest news on the website. Dave Minuk, what's the website?
IllegalCurve.com.
You're a company man. That'll be available as soon as that news was to break, so you can stay tuned for that on the website. The roster freeze lifting as of 12 p.m. Central Time tomorrow, 12 noon. The NHL schedule is being released at 5 o'clock Central Time tomorrow, so you can stay tuned for the Jets' release of their schedule. That'll also be available, of course, on the website tomorrow, as soon as that happens, right around that 5 o'clock window. Friday night, 7 o'clock, back here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, first round coverage of the NHL draft. We're going to have pick-by-pick discussions and analysis. Of course, look at it through the lens of the Winnipeg Jets. So that's Friday night at 7 o'clock. We encourage you all to tune back in for that. Saturday morning.
Whoa.
Sorry?
Don't forget, Friday, the AHL schedule, Manitoba Moose schedule is being released as well, Drew.
Come on. Of course. Dave, I apologize. And to all of our Moose fans, I apologize. The AHL schedule, that information will be on IllegalCurve.com.
Home opener, season opener announced today. Marlies on the 16th. Grand Rapids here in Winnipeg on the 22nd. So make sure you stay tuned to IllegalCurve.com. We'll have Moose news as well.
There you go. Moose news on IllegalCurve.com. Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Note the start time, 10 a.m. Saturday morning, day two coverage of the NHL draft back here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. We expect and hope to be joined by whomever the Jets draft, both on Friday night and on Saturday. So you'll probably get your first crack at hearing from the Winnipeg Jets' newest draft picks by tuning in Friday night and then again Saturday morning. 1 week from tonight, starting right around 8 o'clock Central Time, we're going to have our free agency recap show back here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. We remind everybody asking about the merchandise that will be available in the coming weeks and coming months in time for the start of the 2021-22 NHL season. In time for the next Jets season to begin, you can also double down with some Illegal Curve merchandise. Dave is modeling the t-shirts. Dave, show the people the front of the hat. There you go. You will even get a brand new hat, not the one that Dave is wearing, a brand new one altogether. Mr. Ginsburg, I have to say that we have to talk at least briefly about your haircut, because I believe you are even more handsome today than you were earlier before I saw you with this fancy new haircut.
Yeah, thanks. Shout out to Modern Man Barbershop. I appreciate that, Drew. Yeah, it was time to get a haircut.
There you go. Looking good there, Mr. Ginsburg.
How was soccer today?
How was soccer tonight? I'll tell you one thing. I am not meant to be a four-year-old soccer coach, but the kids had fun. So I think that's all that mattered, right?
It's not about having fun, Drew, but winning.
It's about winning? It's about winning when you're four? I can't get the kids to go in the right direction. I got to really start small.
You're not yelling at them enough.
It's true. I should really just pick one kid up and punt one, and then the rest.
What was the Will Ferrell movie? What was the Will Ferrell movie about him and his dad, the soccer one? Kicking and Screaming. Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Maybe watch that before you do your show.
There you go. Yes, and as our buddy Ronnie Dollywall in the chat is reminding us, Ezzy's birthday is on Saturday. So come back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning to wish Ezzy a happy birthday. That certainly will be...
Big 3-9, man.
Big 3-9. Getting old there, Mr. Ginsburg. Hopefully you'll be able to survive all the way over to the big 4-0, which will be next year. And one final thing for tonight. We promised we were going to give away a t-shirt. I've done a random draw behind the scenes, and I am pleased to announce that the winner of the Illegal Curve merchandise is Tracy Okranek. And I hope, Tracy, that I am pronouncing your name correctly. So congratulations, Tracy. You are the winner. The
first ever
Illegal Curve t-shirt holder. So you are going to be get in touch with us, send us an email.
I'll contact Tracy through
Dave's gonna get in touch with Tracy. Congratulations, Tracy, you will win an Illegal Curve t-shirt. Everybody come back on Friday and Saturday and the next Wednesday as well, and we'll have some additional merchandise that we are going to give away ahead of the big launch of the merchandise. The launch date coming up in the next couple of months, so you can stay tuned for that. It's 9 o'clock on Wednesday night. There are no more trades happening tonight. We know the Winnipeg Jets have lost Mason Appleton to the Seattle Kraken. It's going to be a very busy next week and 10 days. We will have it covered for you entirely, both here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors. They make this show possible. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our good friends at Seagram's. Support those fine businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thanks to Mike McIntyre for joining us earlier on the show. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for an immediate replay here on our YouTube channel, as well as available via podcast as soon as we get that up in the next hour or so. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Friday night at 7 p.m., thanks for joining us. This has been a special presentation of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And until Friday, we wish you good night and good luck.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.